For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening. I started yesterday morning, and I want to continue this evening talking about the 10 paramitas, the transcendent bodhisattva practices. This is kind of prelude to our practice period that starts next Sunday about the major bodhisattva figures and the bodhisattva practices and the different approaches to bodhisattva practice that they represent. But this is kind of a review of these transcendent practices. We talked about them a few years ago in one of the other practice periods, and whether or not you're formally participating in the practice period the next 9 weeks, starting on Sunday, just hanging out here, we'll be talking about this stuff. So, and you're welcome, of course, to all our events. So this is one of the lists of different kinds of practices, like the Eightfold Path or the Bodhisattva precepts that help us to see how to express meditative awareness, Zazen heart, whatever you want to call it, deeper awareness, in the difficulties of everyday activity. So sometimes there's a list of 6 and there's an expanded list of 10, so just to mention them again, the dana, or generosity, sila, or ethical conduct and precepts, kshanti, patience, virya, effort or enthusiasm, energy, samadhi, meditative settling, prajna, wisdom or insight, and sometimes that those 6 are one list, and then the practice of vow or commitment, pranidhana, upaya, skillful means, very important, bala, powers, and jnana, which is knowledge as opposed to wisdom, knowing things and how to use those for the benefit of bodhisattva intention and wisdom. So just to mention those 10, and the bodhisattva figures we'll be talking about, like Manjushri and Kanon, the bodhisattva of compassion. Each of them have expressed some combination of these 10. But I wanted to just mention the 10, and I thought I'd talk tonight about, in particular, about 2 of them, although we can discuss others. But, and I talked yesterday mostly about generosity and prajna, or wisdom or insight, but kshanti, patience, maybe the one I talk about most. And then I also want to talk about power, or bala, which is one of the ones I talk about least. So, patience is, we think of as, we might ordinarily think of as a kind of passive practice, just waiting. But it's actually, as a practice, as a transcendent practice, as a practice of enlightening beings, of beings dedicated to universal liberation, it's a very dynamic, active practice. Patience means also tolerance, forbearance, to withstand all kinds of slings and arrows, all the difficulties of our own life and of our world and the world around us. And it's not just, again, it's not just passive, it's attentive. It's from this patience that we can develop the power and the energy to insightfully enact skillful means and commitment. But this patience, this, our just sitting in a way is a practice of patience, of just waiting for the bell to ring, or just waiting, but with attention, not just sleepy, but paying attention to what's going on, being willing and ready to respond when there is something to do. So often there's nothing to do. There's no, whatever the difficulty is that confronts us, whatever the Genjo Koan that faces us, whatever problems there are in our relationships, amongst the people around us, in the world around us, it's hard to see something to do, and maybe there's nothing to do. But if we're paying attention, sometimes suddenly, after the long work of patience, there's some wonderful opportunity to respond in a way that can be very effective. But was it Tom Petty who said the waiting is the hardest part? So how do we practice patience with energy, with attention, with insight, with readiness? How do we give ourselves to tolerating the difficult things in a way that we are not cowering, not sleeping, not numb? So patience is not the same thing as numbness, as fearfulness, as settling. Active, dynamic patience is attentive and ready to respond. So that relates to me to this practice of powers. Bala is the Sanskrit word. And usually, traditionally, it's associated with the we think of supernatural powers of the Buddha or the Bodhisattvas, these unusual capacities, the power of Vimalakirti, one of the six Bodhisattvas we'll study, for example, who can take a galaxy in his hand and toss it around the universe so that it lands back in his hand without any of the beings in that galaxy noticing or being disturbed by it. The ones who notice it are enlightened by it. They're not disturbed by it. For example, or the power of Buddhas to know the past lives of all other beings, or, you know, in terms of the great Bodhisattvas, to grant with the wishes of beings, or to know the Bodhisattva of compassion, to see what would be helpful, to use skillful means to know how to be helpful in a particular situation. So usually in the traditional literature, it's described in terms of these great powers, the power of and the powers that come from extended meditation. And sometimes, you know, when I was younger and lived at Tassajara for a few years, I had developed the meditative power of not needing much sleep. I could 4 hours was enough because I was doing enough zazen, and I would have extra time for study, you know, late at night or early in the morning. And that's a small example, but I think practice. So all of these, you know, we can see these as transcendent practices of bodhisattvas. But as bodhisattva practitioners ourselves, you know, taking the bodhisattva vows, saying the bodhisattva vows at the end of each zendo event, as we do. How is it that we express generosity or ethical conduct or patience or enthusiasm and energy and commitment and skillful means and, in this case, power? So how do we use our abilities? So everybody in this room, I know, has some significant abilities, some significant powers, some way that you can use your talents, your gifts, your powers to be helpful in the world, which is the point. The bodhisattva is the one who supports harmony rather than harm, who is helpful in helping beings. So we have this wonderful example this Saturday of these young, insightful prajna beings who organize these great events all around the country, many hundreds of thousands in Washington, D.C., and I was down at Union Park downtown for a little while for the rally there. I don't know if others of you were down to the march or rally about trying to have sane gun laws. But just to listen to the eloquence of these young people, great power. And we've been, waiting patiently or impatiently for through not just all these school shootings, but the ongoing horrible gun violence in Chicago, and maybe more in South Chicago than up here in North Central Chicago. But this is an ongoing tragedy, calamity. The eloquence, if you look on democracynow.org, for example, the eloquence of these young people was just amazing. And the power that they manifested in bringing together so many people organizing these events. Just one example, but this was the beginning of something. They are very, very, very committed to continuing this. So, there's the power of Sangha. And I mean Sangha in the widest sense, the power of, as Patti Smith says, people have the power. There's the power that at times can manifest, and sometimes it takes a long time of waiting. And, of course, this isn't that everything can get fixed. We live in a world that is characterized, as the First Noble Truth says, of disharmony, of misalignment, of sadness. And we have and it's a noble truth because we can face the sadness in our own lives and in the world. But these paramitas point to practices that are about how to respond, how to be helpful. So part of how to look at these practices is to see how they work together, and that's why they're useful as a background to looking at these great bodhisattva figures that we're going to be looking at the next couple of months. Manjushri, Bodhisattva of Wisdom, Samantabhadra, the aesthetic, devotional bodhisattva of active practice. And it's not exactly how he's seen in the Asian traditions, but I see him as an activist bodhisattva. So in the book I have modern culture figures as exemplars, some of whom are arguable, but Dr. King I have in there. And so so next Monday evening, a week from tonight, we'll have our Shuso entry ceremony. So Asian Nancy Easton will be the Shuso, the head monk for the two-month practice period. She'll be doing some of the talks and meeting with the students in the practice period formally. There's a ceremony, a kind of elaborate ceremony for installing her as Shuso. But I want to say a little bit afterwards about the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of the murder of Dr. King, who I mentioned in the Samantabhadra chapter. Samantabhadra is a bodhisattva in our meal chant we say the shining practice bodhisattva. So each of these different bodhisattva figures, and I'm sort of getting ahead of the talk tonight, but that's okay. Each of them has a combination of qualities, which is why they're archetypal. They've shifted in different cultures, but Samantabhadra has a series of vows and commitments to be helpful to all beings, to study the teaching and share it with others. He's a kind of partner or partner to Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of insider wisdom. And he's also has an aesthetic quality and is very devotional quality, but he's active in the world. So I think of people like Gandhi as well as Dr. King. I'll just read the 10 vows. I wasn't going to go into Samantabhadra so much, but venerating Buddhas, praising Buddhas, making offerings to Buddhas, confessing one's own past misdeeds, this idea of repentance, rejoicing in the happiness of others, requesting Buddhas to teach, requesting Buddhas not to enter nirvana but stay in health beings, studying the Dharma in order to teach it, benefiting all beings, one that I think is important, and transferring one's merit to others, so which we could understand as transferring one's energy and practice, practicing for the sake of others. Anyway, in that sense, I think of activists as fitting into Samantabhadra, amongst other kinds of beings. And I spoke of Dr. King on the formal, holiday of Martin Luther King Day. It didn't get recorded. We were having some glitches, but I'm going to speak during the next month of a number of things that happened 50 years ago in 1968, which I remember very well. I was 18, and who Dr. King is seen as now is not really a full picture. The last year of his life, he was killed organizing sanitation workers in Memphis. He was worked in a poor people's campaign. He was organizing very strongly against the Vietnam War, and he spoke about that a year to the day before he was killed. That's probably why he was killed. He said that the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today was the United States government. So in the time now when we're facing danger from new Cold Wars and nuclear posturing by our government and other governments, and danger of and endless wars, a lot of what Dr. King spoke for was is still very relevant. And of course, that when he was killed, that triggered a lot of anger and riots here in Chicago and around the country. And a few weeks later, I was involved in an event that I'll talk about on the 50th anniversary of that, an uprising at Columbia University, where I was a student, and taking over the buildings for a week, and 700 people arrested. And there were many things that happened in 1968. What happened with the gun of rallies Saturday reminds me of that in some ways, because a lot of the civil rights movement, a lot of the anti-Vietnam movement, was young people organizing. Young people who didn't want to go fight in Vietnam. And so there was a certain kind of power that they had. The war continued for a number of years after that, but things changed. There was a change in the direction of the country because of that. culturally, there was a big change. So we don't know how change happens, but we also don't know our own power. So there's a lot to say about this, and part of what I've been talking about is kind of collective power. We also don't know individually. There are people in this room who've done wonderful things on their own. We each have a great capacity, but sometimes it takes a while to manifest it. So this relationship that I'm pointing out tonight between two of these ten, patience and power is one word, ability, is one of the interesting relationships. Skillful means is also related to this, and insight, and of course the samadhi, settledness, calm. If we think we can just go around and exert our power without that settledness, we get into trouble. So there's a lot more to say about all of this, but maybe that's enough for me to start. And so I invite your your comments, responses about these paramitas, or these two, or any of the others. So please feel free. Yes, Suzanne.
Well, when you were talking about the
Do you all know who Emma Gonzalez is?
Maybe. Oh, sorry. Emma Gonzalez is the Parkland student who first spoke out and then beat the. Sorry about that.
No, it's fine. I would like you to say more.
and
she's very eloquent.
She's one of the organizers and just incredible. Granted, Parkland students have immense privilege in their education.
And she was silent for this amount of time
She was silent not for the full amount of time. She spoke, and then she filled the rest of the time for 6 minutes and
27 seconds
or something with silence. So I don't know exactly how long the silence was, but it was like televised live. That was silent.
And that was the time when while the shooter was shooting or something like that?
Yeah, the time was 6 minutes and 20.
There was a time after he stopped shooting.
Oh.
That he found his he abandoned his gun and left him with the other students, and they let him go.
Yeah.
At the end, she said, now at this point, he has now left. So she says that it was 6 minutes and 27 seconds from when she walked on stage. I don't know, but it was the longest duration of silence that's ever been transmitted on the television. All the rules against that, like literally.
Yes, right. You know, the FCC.
It's a high school student that's commanding who is in degree.
Yes.
But I was thinking about it when I was watching it and thinking about it in relation to practice and how we practice. And silence, and how much power that holds, watching people being so
That's exactly the waiting, the silence, and the power together. That's a perfect example. Yeah.
And then when she spoke again, it held this, the two together, just played, worked with each other in a way that really raised her back to something.
Yeah.
That was a lot in your world from a neighborhood where there's people being shot all the time, and she's lost family members. And she spoke.
Oh, I saw her, yeah.
11 years old, standing outside with 800,000 people or something, speaking on my
phone. I had a tears in my eyes. I don't remember, she ended up by saying, only 7 short years until I vote.
Yeah. Yeah, saying I would be voting, yeah.
That's right.
And,
it was powerful.
And the fact that the kids are looking at the intersectionality of their experiences, they're not just residing in us versus them. They're the Parkland students and Hyder students from Chicago who went there and met with, there's this listening that's happening that most adults are not doing in the midst of this. And listening. Solving our problem and listening to these kids that have been marching the streets since you're talking about since Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
And that this isn't the first time that kids have led marches. You were saying you're in college, but also all the kids that were the fire.
Right, during the civil rights movement, the 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds. I was
watching this kind of moment and then this global relationship.
Thank you. Yes, Dennis.
Say a little more. I have a transcript watching all that. It's really, really, I'm a little older than you, but I was living through the same. 266, 7, 8, 9, 7, 1, mid-war period. Really, really, really reminded me of the civil rights movement and how it sprang up almost spontaneously from one of the young people. I must say I had a real hope.
Well, it needs to be sustained, and they it looks like they will, but we can support that. The thing about dialogue, too, just to listen to different viewpoints, to hear, when it becomes us versus them exclusively, in this situation, it's easy to call out the politicians, but to in terms of the range of all people, I appreciate, Dennis, you're talking a while ago about people who grew up in gun cultures. And so it's not about eliminating that. It's about just having some sensible, reasonable gun control. That's not something that's impossible. I wonder if people have other examples of this sense of power as a practice, of how to use our abilities, and you know, this is in this example, it's kind of communal, but Hector, I'm thinking of theater groups coming together and producing something powerful together, for example, or how people can do things together, but also how we each can use our capacities. So. Yeah.
Just before coming here, I was reading in a book about the work of art that it has the power to detain us or arrest us in the midst of the world. All of a sudden, a new space is made for this image, whether that's cinematic or theatrical or visual image, right, to unfold. And there is a like very mysterious power in that, in being arrested or detained, which is the words that the author was using. We tend to hear them in the context of policing, right? To be detained. But there is this flip side.
Interesting.
That the attention can actually be stopped and all of a sudden becomes focused on samadhi-like.
Yes.
Right? And there's just tremendous beauty in that. Yesterday, I went to see a play called Roundheads and Pointheads by Bertolt Brecht.
Oh.
And sadly, so relevant. It's about this fictional country that it's going through economic and political turmoil, and the people in charge decide to exploit a difference in the way that people's heads are. So if you're a roundhead or a Zach, you're good. If you have a pointed head, and it's really interesting, the prosthetics that the actors you're the enemy, and your land can be confiscated, you can be arrested and shot. And, you know, of course, the play was influenced by Nazi Germany, but it takes that a step further. The final image, which I won't give away in case anybody goes to see the show, was a great example of a group of people making something powerful together.
Mm. Thank you. That's interesting about creating a space and stopping. So samadhi, part of that is just concentration, focus, stopping. So the relationship between samadhi and patience is also interesting, that part of patience maybe is to stop all of our busyness, you know, just to give our attention and to wait in that kind of space. How is it to be willing and ready to respond from there, as opposed to from, you know, all of our ideas and ideologies and so forth? Just a thought. Yes, Bill.
I think one of the things that's going to be most difficult for young people today is to reinvigorate a sense of connections among different things that have gone on and are historical events. And I just know this is a continual frustration for me in, you know, teaching in the university. In the period of 68, and I can't remember if it was in 1968, but remember when the Black Panthers organized to enter the State House in Sacramento,
Huey Newton, yes.
And of course, Ronald Reagan was the governor at that time, and suddenly both Reagan and the NRA were very much in favor of gun control at that moment, which which I think is the sort of thing that needs to be reactivated as a memory, and also connected to, and I mean, truly the NRA is something that I would truly have absolutely nothing good to say about whatsoever. Sort of goes back to that discussion a few weeks ago about it seems it is permissible to not necessarily have compassion for an institution. Even if we have some compassion for some of the people caught up in it or whatever.
But, right, yes.
I mean, it does need a little bit of systematic analysis that I hope young people will embrace. The NRA, for one thing, is nothing but a lobbying arm for the gun manufacturers.
Right, of course.
The interest is simply in having those manufacturers sell ever more guns, and they will use whatever fears to motivate people thinking that even though they have 10 guns already, they have to go buy 10 more. And I don't know, I just think this connectivity is going to be a very big part of what young people, and all people, will be able to do in this situation, but I find it difficult. I'd like to know, for those, I didn't see this on television, I didn't hear it on the radio from the demonstrations, but when they had silences, you know, it's very difficult in our society to have silences anymore, because then people just, in a prosthetic way, will pull out their phones and start looking at them. And to be honest, I think the cell phone is one of the worst things that has ever happened in our world, and is destroying education and whatnot. And I truly think it's horrible, and I do think it's also where it's difficult to have silence now. So if I'd seen it on television, I would have been looking for what they were doing. You said they were uncomfortable at times, but
they were not actually going for that, from what I could see.
Well, that's very good to know.
It was more wanting to applaud and wanting to encourage her, but it was a restlessness.
This well,
that's
what
I felt like.
They started a chant one point that they were going to do.
Yeah.
What seems to me real restlessness is all to the good, but you know what I mean, if it's not just...
Yeah, part of what you're saying, this is part of why I want to talk this month about 1968. I mean, my personal involvement in it, but that there's not a sense of history, and that there is that history matters, and who Dr. King really was, and what happened in the anti-Vietnam movement, and how that echoes. Not exactly, but in some ways today. And to me, what I learned from all that is that the NRA pushing guns, you know, in South Chicago and everywhere and all around the country is, to me, totally connected to our foreign policy of pushing weapons of, you know, to the Saudi Arabians and in all around the world. And so that, and the endless war, the wars and anyway, that our economy based on selling weapons, I think that connection is important, and I hope that gets made. Hasn't really yet, but our foreign policy is really dangerous now. So I'm interested in helping make those connections and looking at history and, you know, and I have my own perspective, and so I'm not trying to impose that on anyone, but I want to bring that up for, given that I lived through that, I wanted to share that, so that's what I'll be doing. Last word, Jen.
I watched Democracy Now. I didn't watch it for 4 hours on Saturday, but I did this morning, and there are periods of silence was often broken by racism or something. But at least that was my... I'm confused because what I saw, Emma Mongoli was silent, but the crowd was was not. And I think it was partly that they did not understand what she was doing. And so they would break out in cheers or they would make noise and it would go nowhere. I mean, when they interacted with the silence, it went nowhere. And she didn't do the whole 6.5 minutes this morning. I don't know what happened, you know, throughout the time of the silence. But my impression was the crowd was not silent at all.
I don't know. I didn't see the whole thing. But
They did not get it.
But there was a chant that started that took up a minute or two.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it was there.
So it was just this very interesting tension between somebody who was completely holding silence.
She was, yes.
And an immensely large crowd holding it and then not able to do anything, restless with it. Like it was.
But I think they didn't understand what was going on. That's part of the reason they couldn't be made silent.
So just a comment on that and silence and. As one who has gone to numbers of demonstrations, often there is loud chanting and sometimes it's angry chanting and I don't join in that, but I recall one of the most powerful demonstrations I witnessed on television, and it wasn't there, was after students were pepper sprayed on the University of Davis campus. I think this was over torture. I'm not sure what the exact issue was, but the students were pepper sprayed because they were protesting. And there was afterwards the university chancellor, there was a protest, and the university chancellor walked through the protest. And as she walked by, there was total silence. That was the most amazing protest I've seen. There was no, and she was really shaken. And so we know silence is powerful. This is our practice, to sit silently for whatever, 30 minutes or 40 minutes, and then here we are babbling. our training is to stop, just sit silently. So I don't know. I don't know how this, where the power of that goes, but we might be creative somehow. So let's close with the chanting of the four bodhisattva vows.